Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for autumn semester 2017. Lecture 8, delivered on September 14, 2017. The title of this lecture is Interest Rates and the Time Value of Money.
Tonight, interest rates and yields. I'm going to begin this with some naming of things. The word interest rate, the term interest rate, there are a number of other words and terms that actually mean the same thing. We use them for different purposes, applying the same concept, but for different ways that we would use an interest rate. One that is very common that you would hear is yield. Yield is an interest rate. Discount rate, you would hear. Another would be for example, anything that has the word margin in it would probably be a rate of some kind. ROA, return on assets, ROE, tax rate. They're all interest rates of one kind or another. One that I would key on tonight is the term yield. I've used the term discount rate already. When we do a present value, we are using a discount rate to discount a future cash amount to the present. So tonight, it has more to do with yield. Now, the one thing that I said before, and I'm going to say it again now, is that we want to express interest rates as annual, so we can compare different things that we're looking at, and they're all the same thing. In other words, a one-year interest rate, an annualized rate, a yield. To that extent, one thing that I would want to bring up. Suppose that you had, and I'm going to just throw an example out. You don't need to know the background of it, but I'm sneaking in some terminology on you while I show you something. Suppose that the yield the T-bill yield, the Treasury bill yield, right now stands at, let's say, 2.15%. And the yield on a high grade, a AAA corporate bond, is, let's say, 4.50%. What we would be calling this, taking this minus this, the corporate bond yield minus the Treasury yield, 4.50% minus 2.15%, we call this thing, and don't worry too much about this right now, we would call this the credit risk spread. But that's not what I really care too much about now, it's just the number. 4.5, that would be 1.35%, the difference of 4.50 minus 2.5. We would probably say that the credit risk spread is 135 basis points. One basis point is 0.01%. So you're going to hear me use that term, okay, it went up 12 basis points, or the spread between these two debt instruments is 17 basis points. All that means is that that would be, if I said 135 basis points, that's 1.35%. If I said 18 basis points, that's 0.18%. It's a common term in business, especially in finance, to use basis points, especially when you're talking about differences that are not huge between two interest rates. We would probably express the difference as basis points. Now, the next piece of terminology. When we are talking about debt securities, debt instruments, anything that is less than one or equal to 1 year in duration, we call a bill. So if the government borrows money from investors for 1 year or 6 months, we call that a treasury bill. Between 1 year to 7 years, and some people say it's 10 years, we call that a note. And more than 7 years, and again, sometimes they say 10 years, we call that a bond. Now, here's where it gets a little bit different, and I've brought this up, but I want to emphasize it. This is where we have to begin to separate what we say as professionals from what people commonly understand. When you borrow money, you are the issuer of the debt. You are the issuer. You are the writer. You are the seller of the debt instrument. The investor, rather the person or thing lending you the money, is the buyer of the debt, the investor in the debt, the purchaser of the debt. So in other words, let me write this on the board here. Borrower. You are, if you are the borrower, you are the issuer of the debt. Otherwise, we can say you are the writer of the debt. You are the seller of the debt. The lender is the investor. The buyer, the purchaser. So in other words, when you borrow money for a car, you are the seller of a note. You borrow for 5 years, you're the seller of the note. The bank buys the note from you at the amount you want to borrow. You have decided that you want to live the dream. You want to buy your own big mobile home. Double wide. You've got a big family. You just married a lady with 12 children, and her brother sometimes comes around when, you know, the law is catching up with them, so he crashes your place. Then you have to get rid of the meth lab after he leaves and all that. You are going to borrow money from me. A banker. You write a loan agreement. You write it. You are the writer. And you say, I want to borrow $60,000 on a 20-year agreement. Okay. You are issuing a bond for $120,000. So let's say it's really fixed up, really nice. Okay. I buy that bond from you at a price of $120,000. You are writing a debt. And you say, no, they've got the paperwork there. No, all they're doing is making sure that what you write is what they want. But they're going to give it to you first and you sign it, meaning that you wrote it. And then I will say, put my signature on it saying, I agree to buy this bond from you. Okay? This is a tough thing to think about. Bills. Well, I got a bill from the cable company. Well, no. They just issued you a memorandum reminding you of the bill that you sold to them, agreeing to front you service for a month. So it's a bill. You're the writer. All they did was send you a reminder, a memorandum. And then what I did as the cable company is I simply agreed to purchase this bill from you for 30 days of service, giving you that for free for 30 days, and then you have to pay it back, okay? So this is a little bit different from how most people think about these kinds of debt, think about debt. They think of a bill as coming from a company. No, you actually originated the bill. You were the writer as borrowing money for a short term or a long term. I'll show you something here interesting. Pull out my money. Okay. A $1 bill. Well, we say bill, but it's not really. Sir, can you read me what is at the very top of that?
Federal Reserve note.
Say that last word again.
Note.
Note. This is an intermediate term debt instrument representing an obligation that the Federal Reserve wrote to you. And they're going to promise to pay it off. It's a note, so it would last anywhere from 1 to 7 years. How are they going to pay you off? They're going to print more of these. Believe it or not, that's exactly how it works. They just print them off. What oftentimes they just borrow, they lend money to the U.S. government, and so they back these with the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which owes the Federal Reserve the money, and then they write this derivative security to you. It is a derivative, a fiat derivative, and all they say is, okay, we'll pay you back in 7 years. Now, back before your time, and unfortunately I can say this was in my time, these actually said at the top, they didn't say Federal Reserve note, they said silver certificate. So in other words, you could go into any bank and get the equivalent of a dollar in silver. Because all the coins were made of silver, you could get 4 silver quarters for a dollar bill. That's why back in the day, these were backed by a hard commodity asset. And then in the 1960s, that went away and they backed them with nothing but the full faith and credit of the United States government. But yeah, they owe you money. This is it. How are they going to pay you? By printing more of them and giving them to you. If that sounds a little bit dodgy, well, don't think about it too much. I don't want you turning into anarchists on me. Okay? But yeah, it gives you a different perspective on thinking about what is going on in debt as we accumulate or whatever. Okay, now, moving to the idea of yields. We want all yields to be expressed in annual terms. We want to annualize yields, okay? First, I'm going to show you a quick little dirty trick. It's something that it's actually in contracts when you borrow money, but it's not what is told to you up front. It's kind of buried sometimes. That if you have, let's do something, and I'll just show you an example. The best way to do this is just show you an example, and instead of just writing an abstract formula. Suppose that that loan for that double-wide trailer of yours, they say the APR on that loan is 6.59%. Okay? But you are making payments monthly, so the compoundings will follow the payments. Always remember that. If they don't tell you a compounding, look for how often the payments are. That would be your compounding. Now, you're not paying 6.59%. On an annualized basis, you're paying 1 plus 0.0659 over 12 to the 12th power minus 1. That is called the effective yield or the effective rate. And I'm just going to do that for you right here and show you that it actually works. And this is one of those, if you do it wrong, it will look very wrong. Open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0659 divided by 12, close the parenthesis, to the 12th power. Minus 1. Notice that if it's a scientific calculator, you can just string it in. 6.79%. Notice something about finding an effective yield. It doesn't matter how much you borrow or for how long. This could have been any loan, monthly payments, at an APR annual percentage rate of 6.59%. Okay? So there is your effective yield on the loan, right there. Kind of an interesting thing. By law, they have to disclose this in somewhere in your loan agreement. So if you look around, you'll see that the APR is what's right up there. But if you look around, it'll be the effective yield will be shown. When you see car advertisements, you borrow at 1.99%. Well, that's the APR, you would have to go and calculate the effective rate off that. And if you looked at the loan agreement, somewhere in there, you would also see the effective rate disclosed to you. But they advertise APRs. But what really is going on is the effective rate. That is an annualized, taking out the compoundings, the more than once a year compoundings, and turning it into just a pure annual rate. That's what an effective yield does. Okay, and you can see the formula. All the formula is 1 plus your APR divided by the compoundings per year to the number of compoundings per year for 1 year. That's all it is. That's how you find an effective rate. Now, the next thing, clear this. Okay. Taking all that aside here for just a little bit. Important thing. Consumer loans have a fundamentally different feature from corporate and government borrowing. With a consumer loan, when you figure out your payments, every payment you make, part of it pays interest on the balance, and then part of it shaves off money from the balance due. We say that the payments service the debt and amortize the debt so that at the end, you've paid off the balance. That's a consumer loan. Almost all consumer loans have that feature. They service and amortize. Corporate and government debt are fundamentally different. Let me do an abstract one. Let's say TNC 6.5% 2037. That would be a typical listing for a corporate bond. The TNC would be the trading symbol of the company. The 6.5% is what we call the coupon. The coupon. And the 2037 is the date of maturity. So, which means that this is a term of 20 years remaining on this bond. The term is how long is remaining. The date of maturity is when it ends. Here's the thing. Every government and corporate bond will have one feature that I don't need to tell you that you will not be told. They all have face values in increments of $1,000. In other words, governments and corporations borrow in increments of $1,000. The face value, or what we call the face, is $1,000. The coupon is the interest rate as a percent of face. So the interest rate that this company, TNC, will pay is $65 per bond every year. You buy this bond. Every year for the next 20 years, you're going to get $65 in the mail, the service of the debt. In 2037, you'll get one last $65 check, and you'll get your $1,000 back. In other words, they don't pay any of the of the principal during the life. Governments and corporations do not pay the principal during the life. They pay only the interest for the year. Later you'll learn that it's every 6 months. They break it into 6 month increments, but we don't need to worry about that right now. All that matters is that when you see the coupon, that's a percent of the face value. No matter where you are, what I'm asking you, what quizzes ask you, you already know that the face value is $1,000, period. Okay. Keeping that in mind, the corporate and government debt. Now, there's one kind of oddball that the government does, and some companies do too, when they issue a bill. What usually happens with a bill is there's no coupon. You simply buy the bill for less than $1,000, and in 1 year you get $1,000. Your investment earning is the difference between what you buy it for and the $1,000. Those are called discount bonds. Those are called discount securities. T-bills are discount. There are some corporate, short-term corporate things that are discounts too. They borrow, they give you back $1,000 in 30 days and you lend them $996. And then so in 30 days, your $996 becomes $1,000. Okay, so now, don't ever forget this. The face value of any debt instrument is $1,000. Face value. I don't have to tell you. In 30 years, you're going to be a wealthy, powerful executive in Chicago. You're going to be walking down the street. You've gotten a little older. You got a pot belly, but you're dressed really nice. And this old street guy crawls up to you and he says, "You, I know you." And you realize that it is Professor C. "All right, I got a question for you." Wait, my kidney tube is leaking. There. "Now, I got a question for you. What's the face value of a bond?" What do you say?
$1,000.
Good. So I take my cane and I beat you. Good. Always. You think I won't do that in 30 years in Chicago? Okay, so now let me explain, and I'm going to take and give you your first, one of the most fundamental principles of finance I'm going to reveal in what I'm going to do. But I got to give you a little setup here about how the government borrows money. And I'm going to describe to you the old school way. It's done all electronically now. But it's the same thing except in the virtual world. The government needs to borrow money all the time. We don't have enough money to pay the bills of the public sector. We just don't. We choose to live in a world where we spend more than we take in. We choose to have high expenditures on military. We choose to have expenditures on national parks and not so much welfare programs anymore, but we've got all these agencies and all these people we have to pay. We have all of this stuff, and we don't have the money to do it. So we have to borrow money all the time. There was a time, actually, in your very young years when we weren't doing it. We'd finally come out of that. And then the 21st century happened, and we went straight back into this debt lifestyle. So there you are. But anyway, we borrow money all the time. Now, when the government borrows money, the way it would do it is it would hold an auction. It would lay out different debt securities, bills, notes, and bonds, representing different periods. Okay, the bills would be for short-term things that the government can't afford to pay for. The notes would be for intermediate things the government can't pay for with tax revenues. And the bonds would be for long-term projects the government can't pay for with tax revenues. So a typical auction would have a variety of instruments on the table. And then wealthy investors, lenders, this would be things like life insurance companies, pension funds, mainly, well, a lot of it, foreign corporations, a foreign governments. Remember, they have all that money because we buy their cheap imports, so our dollars flow to their central banks. And then those central banks have to spend them in the United States, so what those central banks do is go to the auctions and lend our government money by buying these debt securities. The old idea, well, we're going to cut off our ties with China, teach them a lesson. Oh, yeah, sure you're going to do that. We tell them, we're going to do what you don't want, and they're going to say, you're mama-san. No. Canada, the European Union, Japan, the Arab states, they've got the money so that we can live beyond our means. We can have low, low tax rates, tax cuts every year, and then war, 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 welfare, welfare, welfare. We just do this. This is how we do it. Okay? It's the American way. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to do an auction that is only one-year treasury bills, one-year T-bills. We're going to have a nice old-fashioned auction, T-bills on the table. This will be borrowing money for exactly 1 year. The reason I'm going to do this one is so that we can do exactly a one-year yield. So we've got these T-bills on the table. We've got a nice auditorium. We've got nice soft music. We've got snackies over there on the sides. And what happens is that you, sir, wander into the auction. And I am the hostess of the auction. My name is Mabel. Well, how you doing there? You're new to our auction, so you want to buy a T-bill, I understand. Well, how nice. Come with me, young man. My God, you're a strapping young man. I got a daughter. You really are. Come on. We got all these. Don't snort at him. I mean, I'm Mabel. I need that girl out of my house. We got a nice T-bill here. Now, in 1 year, that T-bill, we will send you $1,000 if you'll buy it now. And you're going to buy it for less than $1,000. So first thing we're going to have to do is get a price of that T-bill. Okay. So, I mean, there are other people in there buying, so there's demand. So the prices are going to be kind of good, stiff. Let's say that you offer $970 for it. So you tell me. You're offering me, Mabel. Tell me. $970. My God. Okay. Earl, bag one-year T-bill, $970. Drag it through the garden. Earl puts it in the bag. Here you go, young man. Okay. So now, in 1 year, what are you going to get from the government? A check for. Oh, I love it when you talk like that. $1,000. You get paid. That's okay, so now, and don't make this some hard thing. What's your dollar interest you earned if you put in $970 and you get back $1,000? What's your dollar's amount of interest? $30. There you go. $30. So now, we are now in a position to calculate exactly, it was 1 year, so what we're going to calculate here is exactly a 1 year yield, which would be the interest earned over how much you invested. Now watch it, it's 970. Don't put $1,000 down there because I will try to trick you on a quiz. I'll give you the number that you would get if you divide by 1,000. You didn't invest 1,000, you've invested 970. So now we can go ahead and calculate the yield on this $30 divided by $970, 3.09%. There's a 1 year annual yield on this T-bill. Okay, so now, a year later, you show up at
A treasure auction. Well, there you are again. My goodness, you came back. You got your $1,000 check. Good man. Now, you're back for another T-bill? Well, that's good. That's good. By the way, here's a picture of my daughter. She's a little ugly, but what the hell. Would you like to buy it for a $970 again? Before you say yes, you just let me look around here. Oh, I don't see as many investors this time. Oh, the Chinese haven't shown up yet. We must have said something that pissed them off. That does happen. If we start acting like we're all macho and say, we're going to do this, sometimes those nations of the world step back and let us sweat a little bit. It happens. They essentially, there was one where there were not a whole lot of buyers at an auction, and the prices, demand went down, so the prices sunk a lot. Essentially, the nations of the world looked at us and said, who's your daddy? And we found out, okay. So you look around and you say, I'm not going to buy it. Give me a, demand is not as strong. $950. Outstanding. Earl, 1 1-year T-bill, $950, drag it through the garden, hold the mayo, mayonnaise. Okay. You know, I was supposed to go for a medical procedure in Chicago, but I told them I don't want any mayo. You didn't get that at all, did you? Mayo Clinic, you know. The hell with you. I mean, really? $950. Okay, what's the face value of it? Always? $1,000. You need not ask. So it's $1,000. So the interest this time you earn would be $50. So now we can calculate the yield this time would be $50 over an investment amount of $950. And let's see how that calculation comes out. 50 divided by $950 equals 5.26%. You are seeing an example of one of the most fundamental principles in all of securities. Madam, what happens when the price of a security goes down? What happens to its yield?
It goes up.
Yes. It is one of the most rock solid of all principles in securities. Price and yield are inversely related. The cheaper you buy it at, the higher the yield, but that means the higher the risk. Because remember that risk and return are positively related. So the price and the yield on securities are inversely related. The lower the price, the higher the expected yield. But the higher the expected yield, the higher the risk. So now you're beginning to see this intimate. It is not a speculation. This is not fake news. This is not an opinion. This is rock solid physics of finance. And that's an important thing to keep in mind. Something to remember. Price goes down, yield goes up. So now the question is, well, okay, realistically, and I'll use the example of the Treasury auctions. One of the biggest players at Treasury auctions is not other countries. It is the Central Bank of the United States, which will step into an auction and buy up Treasury securities. The ones that are not being bought by the other nations and the trust funds and the large life insurance companies and all that, those are absorbed by our Federal Reserve. In other words, the Federal Reserve is lending the U.S. government money. But wait a minute, you might say. Isn't the Federal Reserve part of the U.S. government? Yes. And we'll move on from there. So the Federal Reserve steps into the breach. If it wants to, it will step in hard and keep prices from falling because of slack demand. That's what our Federal Reserve, one of the ways it's been keeping these extremely low interest rates for years now is by going to those auctions and absorbing, buying, keeping demand up for those debt instruments of the government. Hence why we have these dollar bills that are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. These are backed by the government's own debt instruments. So the Federal Reserve buys them and then backs its borrowings from the people with these dollar bills. So these are actually a two-stage derivative. These currency and coins are. So we move that to the idea, okay, what has been the history of yields on Treasury instruments? Can we see the hand of the Fed at work? Because the yields would be reflecting demand overall for debt securities of the United States government. So what I'm going to do here is drop this down for just a moment, and I'm going to pick up a site. Now, there are a couple of sites, and if I had my bookmarks here, I'd be able to get this without using Google. Treasury yields. Okay. We'll look at the 1 years here. Now, you notice that since 9/1, the yield has risen by 4 basis points. Okay? In other words, demand has been pulling back just a smidgen since the beginning of the month, simply because the Fed is not stepping in as hard. The Federal Reserve knows that interest rates have to go up. It's known that it has to do this. It wants to do it slowly so that the economy doesn't buckle as interest rates go up. We'll still probably have a recession right about when you guys are out there trying to find jobs. That's insensitive. But you see, the real action, the thing that would be interesting, let's look since the 1 year, 2017. That will be an interesting thing to see. Do you see that since the first day of the year, you really see the effect of rising interest rates? As the Fed does not step in as hard to these auctions to absorb the borrowings of the government, the price has been going down on Treasury one-year T-bills, and therefore the yields have been going up from 0.89% since the beginning of the year on to now. We are now at, what was that, 1.27%, 1.28%. So we have had 0.89 to 1.28, 28, 38, 39 basis point rise since the beginning of the year. You see it? Again, since the beginning of the year, you see the prices have been falling. How do I know that? Because the yields have been rising. The yields at the beginning of the year were 0.89%, which is a pathetic yield on anything. But now, through the course of the year, ups and downs, but the general trend has been upward until now we're at 1.28%. The yield has on a one-year T-bill has, and what that means is because all interest rates in the economy are in some way or another sitting floating on top of what the government borrows money at. So as the yield on the treasuries goes up, the yields on all debt instruments will slowly rise. We hope slowly. Now let me take you back to what was happening, and I showed you this on the money supply curves. Let's look at what was going on since, let's say, 2008. It was in September of 2008 that the economy suddenly buckled, because the Federal Reserve had not been keeping interest rates down, because what they'd been doing is essentially not printing enough M1 money. Lower supply, higher price of money, higher interest rates. So in 2008, the near apocalypse happened in September. So if we do 2008, let's look at what happened just before and after the crisis. Going here into September, look at the beginning of September. The 2-year yield, or 1-year yield on a T-bill at the beginning of September, the first trading day, was 2.12%. Then all hell broke loose behind the curtains. We made it so that people heard there was some kind of a bad crisis, a stock market crash. People had no idea how catastrophic what was going on behind that curtain. Let's see if the Fed suddenly got its act together. Let's look at the end of 2000. Let's look at the end of September. Already, you see how the Fed had already started to aggressively enter the auctions to drive down interest rate yields. Do you see it? From the beginning of September at, really, I can, 2.12%, by the end of September, the rates had dropped to 1.78%. So 20, 30, 40, 42 basis points downward. The Fed was suddenly finding the Lord and realizing that if it wanted to cover its butt and make it look like it hadn't done this, there were other forces, but if it hadn't been one of the big problems. From the beginning of the year, 2000, where the 1 year was at 3.17, to the end of the year, 2008, where the yield had gone clear down to 0.37. You see how strongly the Fed had stepped in, buying up, sopping up massive amounts of Treasury debt to drive the price up and the yield down. They created artificially large demand and therefore driving the price down. The effect was that the government was able to borrow vastly large amounts of money to start to try to stop the bleeding of the economy, to start shoveling vast amounts in the back door of the big banks that were basically dead, but we didn't dare tell everyone that they were dead. By the time we get to 2009, if we want to look at what was going on, once a new administration had stepped in and really gotten serious about covering up the blood trail, going to 2009, we will look down here at the end of 2009, and we had still interest rates. The problem was that interest rates were also going up because the rest of the world was in trouble. All those places that used to go to our auctions, they were in, I mean, this was a global great recession. So there was not as much demand all over the place. So there was a little bit of an uptick in the 10 basis point uptick between the end of 2008 and the end of 2009. Part of that was because our government by that time had already approved a almost $800 billion recovery package. So it was borrowing insane amounts of money to get the economy back on track. It took years for it to heal. You were probably in your sophomore year of high school before the economy began to start to feel like it was alive again. Okay, now, enough of that. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to show you, in reality, a lot of times we get an interest rate that's something kind of messy. It's an interest rate for like 2 years or 3 years. And we have to adjust that back to a 1-year interest rate or a 1-year yield or a 1-year gain. Start with a pretty simple example. And I'm going to show you, I do this with examples. Writing formulas, I get almost a bobblehead when I get too many formulas. And just showing you that it's actually not that hard when you just do an example, you get the idea. Let's say that You look like a genius investor. It's the glasses. I mean, you're obviously an intellectual. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to say you purchase ACJ common at 25.36 per share. Exactly 3 years later, you sell this position for $28.55 per share. So we're going to do an exact number of years because that will show you the way we do it a little more clearly. And then I'll show you what happens if you get messy as far as the time goes. It's not much harder. But first of all, I'm going to do the total yield over the whole 3 years would just be the ending value, $28.55, minus the beginning value, $25.36, divided by the beginning value, $25.36. Now, I'm going to pull this up on the calculator. I'm not going to do this in my head. Okay, 28.55, open parenthesis, 28.55 minus 25.36, close the parenthesis, divided by 25.36 equals a 12.58% return. That is actually the total return. That's a three-year return. We really don't want to use that because we want to be able to put everything annualized so we can compare across investments and all of that, get them all into the same units of measure. This is a three-year. Over a period of 3 years, I earned a total yield of 12.58%. But how would I turn that into an annualized yield? Now, I strongly recommend that you not get the calculation here and then try to key it back in. But if you do, use a bunch of decimal places. But I'm going to write it this way. The way you do it is you would take 1 plus .1258 to the 1/3 power minus 1. You take the total, plus 1, always plus 1. You raise it to 1 over the number of years. Whether that's a whole number or a decimal, you always raise it to 1 over the number of years. Okay? Minus 1. Now, if I were to do that for this one, I'm going to keep all the decimal places, so I'm going to add the 1 and then say equals. And then I'm going to raise this to the open parenthesis, 1 divided by 3, close the parenthesis, minus 1 equals. I now have a 4.03% annualized return. That is a 1 year annual. There are some places that say, oh, just divide the 12.58 by 3. No, don't do that. You get the wrong answer. You have to do it this trickier way. But it's the same thing. This is how you do it. You take 1 plus the total return all to the 1 over the number of years. Now let's try this one. Don't give me the the year, but what's the date of your birth?
December 3rd.
Okay. So I am your rich uncle, and I decide that I'm going to give you stock on your birthday next year. On December 3rd, 2017, you get stock worth $18.12 per share. You get desperate on April 19, 2023, you sell that stock for $27.59 per share. We've got to figure out what the annualized yield is. The first thing that you're going to want to do, is find out how many years there were between those two dates and take one over that as your exponent. You've got to figure out how many years there were. And it's actually, it used to be a real pain in the butt if you didn't know how to do the arithmetic of it. Look at this. Watch this. I'm going to go. Really? There are a number of sites that you can do this. Days of our lives, really? Let me see if I, years. Oh, I was so embarrassed last year. The term we use is periods between, number of periods. I typed that in and I got humiliated with what came up. Years between dates. Date duration calculator. Starting date. You said it was December 3rd, 2017. The ending date, we said you're going to sell off in April on the 19th. Really? 19th of 2023. Oops. I wrote that wrong on the board there. That's... You'll have to find a better site than that one. There are some that will let you go. You know what really bugged me? I was going back in time, and I went back to find something that had occurred during my birth year. It didn't go back that far. The years didn't. Oh, you don't understand how much that will really, really piss you. Oh, sorry. Okay. Calculate duration. That's 1,598 days, okay? Now, what you would do now is take 1,598, and you divide it by 365 days per year. It's 4.3781 years. That's how you do it. You just get the number of years and you put that as the 1 over 4.37881. It's not hard, you just have to remember to do it. So in this case, we've got the end 2759 minus the beginning, which was 1812, divided by 1812. That's your total gain. Now, what I would recommend you do is try to run this as a single-stroke calculation. So I do 1 plus this total gain to the 1 over the number of years. What was that number of years? 4.3781. That should be enough. The one thing you have to watch out for is that whenever there is an exponent involved, when you round, the rounding error increases exponentially. Funny how that works. Minus 1. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to run this, try to run this. If you have to, put a number in, store it in the memory, and then recall it. But I'll try to run this one as just one quick, dirty number. I'm going to open the parenthesis 1 plus, and then I'm going to open a second parenthesis, and I'm going to do the 2759, 27.59, minus the $18.12. Close those parentheses, divided by the $18.12. And you can do it in pieces, but make sure you don't round if you can possibly avoid it. And now I'm going to raise that to the open parenthesis 1 divided by 4.3781. 4.3781. Close parenthesis, minus 1 equals. My ass, I did something wrong. See, I was just testing you to see if you were watching what I was doing. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to open up the parentheses, 27.59 minus 18.12. Two, close the parenthesis, divided by the 18.12 plus 1 equals, and then I'm going to raise that to the 1 divided by 4.3781. Minus 1. Actually, maybe that's it. Well, I screwed it up again. I think if I remember, I did this calculation, it comes out to be about 22% annualized return. It comes out to be about that. 27.59 minus 18.12, do it the dirty way, equals divided by 18.12, and then you add 1, and then raise it to the 4.3781. I did the reciprocal trick. Minus 1. There it is. Got it. See, I just wanted you to see how you can make mistakes doing that. And it's about a 10.08% return annualized. Annualized return on it. And again, the purpose of this is so that whenever we compare investments, the reality is you're going to be buying and selling investments, and you're not going to do it on perfect years and things like that. So you're going to want to be able to turn everything into exactly the same units, annualized yields. And this is how it's done. And that's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.